question was asked, who is Satan? What is Satan? So we find the term Satan in the Torah. There's an angel that's sent to Bilam when Bilam decides he's going to go curse the Jewish people. And this angel keeps stopping him and detaining him. And it's described that that angel was sent l'satan lo. So what is the word l'satan? So some interpret it to mean to shift off the path. Okay, so l'satan lo, to shift Bilam off his path. So we have this angel that's called Satan. What's his job? So his job is to shift the person off his path. Person tries to go down a certain path. The person wants to be a God-fearing person. And this angel has a job. His job is to attract the person, to try and get him off his path, to try and get a person to sin. So God created an angel whose job it is to try and get us to sin. Now, if you'd ask this angel, am I supposed to sin or not? The angel would say, no. I wish you would live up to your task and not be lured away from the right path. But my job is to try and lure you. That's his job. Okay, so what does that mean? So the Gemara tells us...
He's not necessarily a bad angel.
Right.
It's just he has a certain job. It's
not he has a job, right. Now, there are two revelations of Satan. There's one down below, there's one up above. In heaven, he's, so to speak, the prosecutor. He's always saying, this isn't right, and that's not right, and that's not right. He's always, his job is to point out what's wrong with people, what people did wrong. And on earth, his job is to get us to sin, and that's what the Gemara says, Hu yetzera, hu satan, hu malach hamavet. It says it's all the same angel. He comes down below, he tries to get you to do it wrong. You do it wrong, he goes up above and says, look at what he did. And then he says, okay, now can I kill him? So there's this job. Now, in a broader sense, we have to ask, what do you need angels for altogether, right? God's running the world, so who do you need angels for? What's the whole idea of angels? So that's a broader discussion. In a nutshell, we'll just say that God created systems in the world, because if we have systems, then there's a certain amount of understanding that the human being can get about how the world works. So the systems help us understand the world. But that deserves a broader discussion, because there is an element of free will that God gives the angels, meaning they are their own entity, and that's why people were led astray to start worshiping them. That God did create these entities, just like God creates a sun that heats us. God doesn't heat us directly, so too in the spiritual world, God created a system where that system functions. And God, so to speak, as if we'd call it a system of gears, he's the prime gear that's shifting all the other gears, but it's not exactly a system of gears, because in a system of gears, every wheel has to turn by virtue of the big wheel turning them. And here, the wheels have their own free will. Just like the human beings have their free will, angels have their free will. And so too Satan has his free will, and so too the Yetzer Hara, etc. So we have this angel whose job it is to make us sin. And the angel works in two ways. On the one hand, there's the external Yetzer Hara. A person is minding his own business, and suddenly there's a pop-up on his computer luring him from what he should be doing with life. And that's an external Yetzer Hara. It's something external that's pulling him. And then there's an internal Yetzer Hara. The guy's sitting in sheer. He's doing what he's supposed to do. He walked in here. And suddenly his mind is not here. His mind is wandering. That's an argument. That's a fight from within. So there are two types of Yetzer Hara, right? Now they all work with our mind, right? But one is an external allure and one's an internal allure. And they both exist. They both exist on a steady basis. So we have this two types of Yetzer Hara. You'll notice that before Adam eats from the forbidden fruit, even in the Garden of Eden, there is an external Yetzer Hara, right? There is a serpent. There is a forbidden fruit. There is an allure. Even in a perfect world, there's an allure. That's part of living in this planet. So then Adam takes the external Yetzer Hara and ingests it, and now he has a confusion from within. Now he's going to have an internal Yetzer Hara as well. So we have these two types of Yetzrei Hara, desires to do what's wrong. Now, what's with Satan over there in the book of Job, right? So Satan's job, he's the angel who's going to represent the prosecutor. If God has a heavenly court and God describes things to us in a way that we can understand, so then there's also a prosecutor. That's Satan's job. And God says, God is going to decide at the end of the day, but Satan is always asking for permission. Maybe we can say this is wrong and that's wrong, and now I can do this, that, and the other thing. Now, this discussion really has to evolve into an understanding of what's happening in the beginning of the book of Job. You know, it seems like a pretty difficult discussion in the beginning of the book. Satan walks in and God says, where you been? And Satan says, oh, I've been touring the land. You know, it sounds almost like folklore, like a fable. So God says, did you notice my Job? And Satan says, well, sure, he's so pious. You've given him everything, so why wouldn't he be so pious? And God says, no, he's pious even if you take it all away from him. Try and you'll see. So Satan says, thanks, fine, no problem. And he goes out and he takes everything away from Job. And then he comes back a year later, and God says, you see, it was all for nothing. You made me have him suffer for nothing. He's still so pious. You killed his kids, you took his sheep, you took his cattle, you took everything from him, you took his wealth. And you see, he's still pious, so you see. And Satan says, but you didn't let me touch him. You know, if it's not a big deal if he lost everything external to him. But what about himself? He still has his health. He still has his wits about him. If you'd let me touch him, let's see what he'd be like. And God says, okay, it's a deal. But don't kill him. He has to stay alive. And Satan, oh, he's gotten his lot. Now he's going to go out and really make Eov suffer. So Eov gets a heavy sweat and he's covered with boils. And he loses any honor he's had until now. People mock him and spit at him. And kids come in and play pranks on him. And when he goes to sleep at night, he has terrible dreams, nightmares. And then he breaks. Then at some point, Eov blasphemes. And he says a lot of harsh things towards heaven. He says, you know, I'd like to take you to a jury, but there is none I could take you to. I'm scared, because in order for a jury to be just, they have to have control, and no one can control you. And maybe there's some confusion up in the heavens, because maybe you confused the letters in my name on the computer. Instead of Eov, it said Oyev. You know, two letters got mixed up, and I came up as the enemy instead of good old Eov. Or maybe, God, you're not so involved in this world. Maybe you leave things to the constellations, because I can't understand why I'm suffering. And all his friends come and try to tell him good reasons why he should be suffering. And Eov gives even better answers and tells them, no, your answers don't hold water. And he answers each of their claims. Until then, God shows up and says, you know what, Eov's right. He doesn't deserve it. He's 100% right. So then you end the book and say, okay, so why did he suffer? So what were you telling me, right? So that, for that, we need a series on Eov to understand what's really going on there. Where the book begins, oh, there's a series online. It's a whole series in English.
You can't give it in a nutshell, though? It's a very conflicting book when you read it. You're like,
so what's going on, right? The book begins by telling you a very strange conversation. He's really great. And this angel could come and say, try him and we'll see if he's great. So on the one hand, it's portrayed as, this isn't God. This is this angel whose job it is to always say, but maybe not. On the other hand, God says in the beginning he's great. And then God says at the end he's great. And Eov keeps refuting all the arguments. So what is the book telling us? What is the book telling us? Or is the book coming to refute every claim that his friends make, which are regular claims that people tell themselves about? Maybe he's not as pious as I thought he was. Maybe that's why this tzaddik's suffering. And Eov comes back and says, but I am. And they say, but maybe you didn't consider this that you should have done and that. And God wouldn't do this to you if you didn't deserve it. So obviously there are things you've done wrong in life. And Eov says, but I don't deserve this. And the book keeps backing Eov. And repeatedly shows you how Eov's in the right. So maybe part of the point of the book is to refute mistakes that people make when they look at pious people suffering. And maybe part of the book is to tell you there's a system and you don't understand every part of the system. The book certainly spends a few hundred psukim describing God's answer to Eov, where God says, you see, you don't understand, and you see, you don't understand, and you see, you don't understand. And there are so many things about how I run my world that you don't understand. There are so many birds that have that are the prey of so many other animals, and they don't stand a chance at living, and yet I keep them around. And you can't explain that. And there are so many times that clouds form, and there's no rain, and no one understands, and no one can forecast when there'll be rain and when there won't be rain, or why suddenly there's a drought and suddenly there isn't. And you don't understand any of that, but I do. I have a system in this world, and you don't understand it. So God ends this whole speech and says, okay, Eov, so after I've given you this whole explanation, now do you understand? And Eov says, I'm scared of telling you I don't. So I'm not going to say I don't, meaning I don't. But now that I understand that you're running this and you've spoken to me and you've basically told me that it wasn't by mistake that I suffered, I can live with it. So then the book begins by giving us a formula which is on the Kabbalistic side, which the average person doesn't understand, as to why they're suffering. The book ends by telling you that even when God speaks to Eov, what God can give Eov is an understanding that God's running the show. God can tell him, look, I know what's going on, and there is an explanation. Eov can't understand the explanation, even though God spends a lengthy amount of time explaining it to him. Eov says, but I don't understand it. He doesn't say that, but he all but says that. So then, but Eov says, but I can live with it, because my real issue is understanding whether you're even connected, whether you're even looking at what's going on with my life. If you're really connected, if you're really behind everything that happened here, and so then I can live with it, even though I don't understand it. So then you come back and say, okay, so then why did you tell me the beginning, the story of Satan? So that's a big question. Meaning the beginning of the book is a hidden answer to the question. Notice that God does not tell Eov at the end of the book what happened at the beginning. God doesn't tell Eov, hey, there was this conversation in heaven, it was Rosh Hashanah, Satan walked in and made this claim, and so I let him make you suffer. That's not what God tells Eov. So then that means there are two vantage points. There's the vantage point from heaven, and there's the vantage point from below. From below, when we look up, we have a very hard time hearing that answer. The beginning of the book is not an answer we can really hear. Maybe it's true. Not maybe. It is true on some level, on a Kabbalistic level, so to speak, from looking upward, downward. But when we look from down up, so we're being taught, most of the book is to teach us what not to say. Don't try to look at people who are suffering and try to figure out why they deserve it. If you're going to look at a kid in the oncology ward, what are you going to say? The kid, what, he didn't do anything wrong. Poor kid suffering, poor kid ends up dying. What did he do? What was he brought to life for? To suffer? How many times are there people who we look at and we say, what am I supposed to say? You know, the guy suffered to death. So you try to find reasons. And the book of Eov comes and says, no, those aren't the real reasons. So then you say, okay, so then I don't understand. So God says, right, you're not going to understand everything about how I run my world. There are a lot of things you do, there are a lot of things you don't. But if you can understand that the world doesn't end with your passing, there is a world to come. If you can understand that I am intimately involved with what goes on here, and that at the end of this whole system, I'm going to pay you back. It doesn't end with death. The real problem is that we have a hard time really connecting to that idea. Because, like Nachmanides says in his famous disputation with the apostate, Nachmanides says, you know, no one's ever come and told us what's going to be there. To make claims about something that's so distant, that's very, you know, it's easy. Anyone can do that. So there's an element of the answer in that, but that's very hard on a logical level to say, here, I've proven it to you, there's a world to come. No, you could prove to me other things. You could prove to me there is a God. You could prove to me he gave a Torah. And then if within that Torah he tells me there's a world to come, okay. You could take Ramchal's approach. You could say the world is so miserable. Can't be there's... The world ends with our dying because there's too much suffering. Life is too tough for that. There must be a world to come because otherwise, what's the logic in all of life? That's a very morbid approach. I mean, maybe with Ramchal's life, that was his approach. I'm saying most of us have a life where we don't view it that way. I say most of us because there are still people, you know, there are people who will view it that way. But and there are times in life where people will view it that way. But that brings us back to the question, okay, so where is Satan? Like, why is he here? And I don't think we can go into too much depth, but I think we can understand that on some level God is teaching us, I created an angel whose job it is to be a prosecutor. And that's a part of the system I run. There were two approaches in the Talmud. One rabbi used to say, I spit in your eye, Satan. And Satan got pretty upset at him for saying that. Not I spit in your eye, but arrows in your eye, Satan. And Satan got pretty upset at him for that. So what Satan did was he came on the eve of Yom Kippur, when everyone's ravenous eating the meal because they're about to fast. And he stood by the door knocking like a poor beggar. And he kept saying, you guys are eating this lavish meal. I have to fast tonight. You're not going to let me have some of the meal. Come on, it's not nice. So they finally let him in. And he sits at the table and he starts coughing up phlegm and spitting it on the table. And they look at him and they say, come on, behave yourself. No one's comfortable sitting here eating at the table when you're doing that. And he looks at them. Now he's dressed as a beggar. And he looks at them and says, I can't believe you said that to me. You embarrassed me in front of everyone. I can't believe it. And he keels over like he had a heart attack and lies flat out dead on the floor. And now he makes it that they hear hoofs coming, and they hear declaring outside, the Romans' men are coming. This rabbi murdered a poor peasant who came into his house. And the rabbi gets up and he runs from the table. He hears the Romans are coming to get him, and he's got no place to go but the bathroom. He goes to the outhouse and he hides there, and he's sitting there in this stinky place, shivering, scared for his life because he hears the Romans are coming to get him. Now the Romans would torture a person to death. And then Satan walks in. And Satan says, you still want to shoot arrows in my eyes? So he says, what do you want? You're always leading us astray. So Satan says, and he says, so that's why I said it, because you're always leading us astray. And Satan says, yeah, I got my job to do, you know. You can't. So the rabbi says, so what do you want me to say? He says, speak more gently about me. That you wish you'd have the strength to overcome me, but to wish me arrows in my eyes, you want to start with me, I'll start with you, and I'll show you who will win, you know, right? so that's an interesting story the Talmud tells us, that he's got this job, but it's his job. Hey, another rabbi used to say, you know, Satan is really always wishing us we should overcome him. Satan is not a bad angel, he's got his job, but in fact he wants us to stand to succeed, and Satan shows up one day and kisses his feet, right? Because he says, it's not my fault, but this is my job. Ah, so wait a second. So God created an angel whose job it is to lure us. On the one hand, he also wants us to do what's right. On the other hand, his job is to lure us. His job is to come in heaven and be the prosecutor. So he's the court prosecutor. This idea that God creates an angel helps us deal with it to some degree. Meaning, no one wants to think it's Dad who's my prosecutor. You walk into court and the judge is your father. And then he starts giving you a hard time. You get pretty upset. But if it's a court-appointed prosecutor, okay, so Dad's the judge, but I have a prosecutor. So there's a lot to discuss because, again, we're taking the whole book of Job and we're trying to summarize it in 5 minutes. That doesn't really work. And this is a concept within the book of Job, the idea of Satan. But this is just an opening, a few opening remarks, food for thought. So what did we discuss? We discussed that there are two types of Yetzer Hara, external, internal. When Adam eats the external, he internalizes it. Maybe it's worth mentioning that the Medrash says, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, Avos Rabbi Nasan, that in the Garden of Eden, the serpent would have Satan riding on his back. So the serpent, to some degree, represented an external Yetzer Hara also. And then Adam internalizes the forbidden fruit, and now he has internal confusion and an internal Yetzer Hara. We find the word Satan is not necessarily a bad thing. Satan simply means an angel whose job it is to veer off the path. In the story of Bilam, he's trying to save Bilam's life. If Bilam keeps going down that path, which he ultimately does, he's going to his death. Then we find in the book of Job the Satan again. And here we find Satan's job is up above to make claims against us. Chazal say it's the same angel. Satan yitzer rama lachamavit. He does his job down below to lure us. Then he goes up above and prosecutes us. And then he asks for permission to come back down below and do his job as malachamavis. And then in the book of Job, we find that Satan is mentioned in the beginning, but not mentioned in the end. And God does not mention Satan as the reason why Job has his suffering. That's not God's answer. Whatever God's answer is, it does not involve Satan. So then we have to ask, okay, so then why is Satan mentioned in the beginning of the book? And there we said that the simple approach would be, this is something from a, so to speak, a bird's eye view that's being offered us, a Kabbalistic perspective as to what's really going on in heaven. And on a deeper level, we might be able to start understanding it, and that's what we concluded our discussion with. There's a lot more to research and understand. If we have a series on Job, then Bezat Hashem, we'll try.